You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, February 24th, 2025. And of course, this is Grandpa Dan streaming with you, welcoming you to another Monday yet again at RadioAlbion.com. That's right, Monday has crept up on us once again. Thank goodness it has warmed up. We had that cold snap last week. I was running water, had ice everywhere. It's cold. I don't do cold. If I wanted to do cold, I would live up north somewhere. But we're here to warm you up with some fun topics for this show. I've got several stories picked out from the Daily Mail. It is Daily Mail Monday, as I like to call it. And if one story isn't interesting, just fast forward or just stick with it because we got several things. It really is a montage of topics. So let's jump right into it. Popular steakhouse chain that boomed last year has a tough start to 2025 and a fresh warning to U.S. economy. Isn't it interesting how the media hasn't seen any warning signs from the economy? Had everybody talking about inflation, they can't afford anything, can't afford rent, can't afford to live, and the media has just been quiet. We're 2 months in to 2025, a little over a month, roughly, I guess about a month into Donald Trump taking over office. And all of a sudden, the media is seeing red flags and alarm bells in the economy. We've had more than 4 years of a crap economy, and the media just hasn't noticed. But now, all of a sudden, 1 month into Donald Trump being in there, and oh my gosh, red alert. We've got problems. Fresh signs have emerged that Americans are cutting back on eating out, and that is a worrying sign to the U.S. economy. This just started. Nobody has been cutting back on eating out now until just now, 1 month, 2 months into 2025, 1 month after Donald Trump has taken the presidency, taken office. Now all of a sudden the media has figured out that people have quit. You've got people posting all over TikTok, Facebook, whatever. I'm not on any of that, but I see them. You got people posting all over that they're broke. I saw a good video a guy put out on YouTube the other day, and he was just some guy talking about how they've normalized in this country the idea of being poor. You're just they've normalized everybody being poor except for this small cadre at the very top. Oh, but according to the media, this is just something brand new. Texas Roadhouse. And I picked this story, by the way, because I like Texas Roadhouse. It's, you know, yeah. I mean, for a chain outfit, it's actually pretty good. And if you do want a steak, it's one of the better buys. You know, it's not cheap. None of it's cheap. But, I mean, you compare it to about any other place that serves steaks. And that's probably, if you want a ribeye, that's probably your best bet. I'm just saying. Texas Roadhouse had a bumper 2024 as customers snapped up its steak dinners for $20, but its sales have slowed in the first 7 weeks of 2025. Sales were up 2.9% year over year, I'm sorry, in the period, but this is unusually slow for the brand. Okay, wait a minute. I have to stop here. Sales are up 2.9% year over year in the period that they're complaining about. But that's unusually slow for the brand. The steakhouse chain, which has 655 restaurants across the U.S., has not seen quarterly same-store sales fall below 7% since 2020. Last year, same-store sales rose 8.5% for the year, including 7.9% in December. The surprising—I have to stop it because this— actually, the main reason I picked this story is because we have this ludicrous narrative in this country, especially when it concerns Wall Street and these earnings reports that come out. And it is just such a ridiculous fallacy on its face. Any of you spot it right away, just as I do. And that is this notion that everything has to grow, you know, just in perpetuity. I probably didn't say that right. It has to grow forever. Wall Street has, the stock market has to go up forever. And anybody with any common sense could say, well, that's not actually possible. If you had an earnings report that said, okay, so this steakhouse chain, this restaurant chain has been growing 7-8% year over year for the past 5 years. And then you came out and said, okay, well, their earnings for this year are flat. No growth at all. They haven't gone down, but they're flat. Their business has flattened out. In a sane world, that's not a problem. In a sane world, you say, okay, well, they've reached the customers they're going to reach. They have their clientele base that they're going to have. Now, if sales started plummeting, you would say, yeah, you got a problem. You have to look at your quality issues or service or whatever's going on. But it is utterly ridiculous to me that they claim doom and gloom because their sales are continuing to increase, but not fast enough. Nothing can grow forever. If you just think, if you're a business owner yourself, or if you imagine, even if you're wagey and you imagine you opened your own business and your business is growing and you're happy and your business, say your business is increasing 10% every year and you're growing your little small business yourself to the point that you're doing pretty well. And then your business leveled off and now you have a steady stream. You've got your steady base of customers. Everything's going just hunky-dory. It's not, you know, you're not losing customers, or if you do lose a customer, you gain another customer, and everything kind of just has plateaued out. Are you going to go, as a small business owner, are you going to go into panic mode? Are you going to be like, oh my gosh, it has to grow every year, or I'm failing? No, you wouldn't. You'd be like, okay, I've established my business. This is the level of the market, and I'm providing my service or product or whatever it is. You would just be like, okay. This idea, I find this such an insane idea, and this is the reason why I picked this story. This insane idea that everything has to grow, otherwise it's a failure. It's not possible. You can't just... This is one of the problems with the broken healthcare system in this country, because they figure, because healthcare is different from going out to Texas Roadhouse to eat, because if Texas Roadhouse just perpetually increases their prices to increase their profits, people quit going, and they really will crash and burn. But the healthcare industry figures they've got you. You have no choice. If you've got cancer, they can raise the price to whatever they want it to. So that's what they do. They arbitrarily raise their prices every year. And okay, well, we're increasing 7% every year. We just raise the price 7%. Voila, problem fixed. Because they figure you've got no choice. It's your health. They've got you over a perpetual barrel. This idea that everything has to grow. Otherwise, it's just... Here's what we're going to go ahead and finish here. The little bit I wanted to read, because of course they blame Trump. The surprising dip is a sign that cracks are appearing in consumer confidence after the first rocky weeks of Donald Trump's second term. Again... The economy, I still have that lingering cough, sorry. The economy was doing great, but now Trump's been in there for a month and everything's going to pot, you see. It's cracks. Cracks already. They had no seen cracks for the past 4, 5, 6, whatever the hell, however many years. Now all of a sudden the media, and they wonder why they have no credibility. You know, the media is just a joke. They are. They're a joke. They deserve to be mocked every chance you get. I agree with that saying that you may think you hate the media, but you don't hate them enough. They deserve to be mocked. They deserve their horrible lack of credibility because of this sort of nonsense right here. Speaking of lack of media credibility, you the Daily Mail, you know, it wouldn't be the Daily Mail unless you had some juicy, ridiculous Ukraine propaganda nonsense. Furious Zelensky screamed at Trump's envoy for trying to make him sign $500 billion mineral deal. Again, Daily Mail with a whole paragraph for headline. Somebody needed to teach these people back in journalism school. Is this a woman that wrote this? No, it's a guy. Wow. I would expect better. No, I don't. It's the Daily Mail. There's no difference. I'm sorry. Anyway, I got sidetracked. Somebody should teach these people. You know, headlines are supposed to just tell you some of the story. You look at our headlines for our shows here at Radio Albion. They're concise, to the point. You get an idea. That's all it's supposed to do, is give you an idea. You don't write a whole paragraph and call it your headline. Okay, sorry. Anyway, I wasn't done reading the headline and was so loud it could be heard through the door and left U.S. Treasury Secretary shaking. Volodymyr Zelensky. Yes, I laugh every time I see this ridiculous. They can't call him Vladimir. That sounds too Russian, so they had to reinvent this new name of Volodymyr. Volodymyr Zelensky last week dispelled any fears he could be bullied. Of course he can't be bullied. Have you seen the guy? He wears a combat green t-shirt. I mean, that guy, every time I see him, I'm intimidated. I'm thinking, my gosh. He just looks like he came back from stabbing some Russian special forces soldier in the neck with his knife. Volodymyr Zelensky. Volodymyr Zelensky last week dispelled any fears he could be bullied into accepting a woeful peace deal with Russia. I'm sorry, I keep stopping. Ukraine is lost. You're starting to see this in various corners of the internet that were all in on this, you know, plucky little Ukraine Avengers movie narrative bullshit for years now. You're starting to see the stages of grief kick in. You're starting to see them come in and go, well, if they just had this. You know, they're starting to slowly creep it. The war lost. When you lose a war, you know, if Zelensky was actually Ukrainian and not Jewish, and that is relevant, it's your own, because the difference is your own people. Benjamin Netanyahu is doing what he thinks is best for the Jewish people in Israel because he's Jewish and he's overseeing the Jewish nation, so he's looking after the Jewish people. You know, you may not agree with what he's doing. You may not think it is correct, but nobody can look at it and say Benjamin Netanyahu is not trying to do what is in the best interest of the Israelis. You see, there's a difference. If somebody else, non-Jewish, if you had, say, an Arab president of Israel, as unimaginable as that would be, but just use your imagination. If you had an Arab president of Israel and he kept throwing the IDF, you know, at an opponent that was just butchering them, you would sit here and say, hey, this guy is needlessly throwing Israelis into a meat grinder, that they're not winning. You would question if this Arab president of Israel, prime minister of Israel, really had the best interests of the Israeli people in mind, wouldn't you? That would make sense. So it is relevant that Volodymyr Zelensky is not Ukrainian, he's Jewish. Because if he was an actual Ukrainian, if he was Slavic, he would be looking at all of his people that are being needlessly killed and want to put a stop to it. That's why it's relevant. And you won't say, you'll hear it here on Radio Albion. But I mean, in the mainstream media or any other outlet, that's a third rail they don't want to touch. You know, they'll talk about the meat grinder and they'll talk about, you know, they need to stop this. But then you'll see them talk about Zelensky is sacrificing his own people. No, he's not. That's a key element here. He's not. He's not sacrificing. They're not his people. Anyway, the war's lost. And at this point, imagine they're still dragging people off the street to go throw them into this meat grinder. And it's so pointless because it's lost. There is no path forward to turning it around. There's just not. And it's not as though, you know, you don't have a condition here to where, like, for instance, in World War II, where the Allies demanded unconditional surrender from the Axis powers. They said, we're not going to accept any conditions, only unconditional surrender. When you do that, you create a basically to the last German or the last Japanese mentality, because there's no pathway to negotiate a settlement. Under normal war conditions, when the leader of a nation realizes there's no path forward to victory, and victory is always achieving your political aims, then they negotiate a settlement. Russia has not done that. They have been very clear what they want. Their demands from the get-go, when they started the special military operation, what they wanted. They've been very upfront with their demands. There is not they're not demanding unconditional surrender here. They've been open. They'll work on some. These are their points that their political points are not willing to compromise on. There's a path forward. The point I'm trying to make here, and I'm being too round about it, the path forward, there's no path forward to a Ukrainian victory. Anyone could tell you that there wasn't a path forward to begin with, but nonetheless, it's undeniable now. The war's over. Everybody who dies is dying pointlessly. So you need to negotiate a settlement. Volodymyr Zelensky should be blowing up Putin's phone, trying to find a way to meet a settlement. And instead, he's running around in his green T-shirt, continuing because he's caught up on his own. He's high on his own nonsense. This guy, and this is a side of him, we'll get back to our story in a minute. But I've been saying for a while, y'all know, y'all regular listeners, I've been saying since like at least last year that there were hints that, you know, Zelensky needs to start taking the clue and taking his money and leaving the country. Well, the hints are now becoming not so subtle. If y'all noticed that, if y'all been keeping up with the news, you know, this back and forth between Trump with Zelensky, this guy needs to take the money and run. Anyway, where are we at here? Oh, hey, dispelled any fears he could be bullied. Yes. Piece of woeful deal with Russia when he delivered a dressing down that left a senior member of Donald Trump's administration trembling with fear. These Daily Mail's propaganda stories. Of course, there's no actual like sources quoted here. It's all anonymous sources. If you want to decide if this is true, just go to your wagey job tomorrow. And, you know, go to one of your supervisors and give them a good telling off and see how that works out for you. It's the same dynamic. Earlier this month, Trump dispatched his newly minted, see, they did a little pun there, newly minted Treasury Secretary, minted because they mint the, yeah, Scott Bessent to Kyiv. You see, Kyiv, they're still doing that Kyiv thing. One of the things I'm looking forward to this stupid war ending is maybe the rest of the world, you know, the insane world, clown world, can go back to calling it Kyiv, which is what it's always been. This Kyiv nonsense. He got sent to Kyiv, because you have to say that Kyiv. It's I always think of that meme. It's Kyiv. To present the Ukrainian leader with a deal, Bessent proposed an exchange, some of Ukraine's vast mineral wealth, for a long-term security guarantees against future Russian attacks. But upon reviewing the contract in detail, Zelensky and his aides discovered that there was no such security guarantees, including in the deal. And that, too, is bullshit. Trump said up front that this was to pay for what they've already gotten, not more to get in the future. I mean, all of us read that in the media, and then they have the nerve to sit here and say, oh, no, they went there and told them that they were going to give them security guarantees in exchange. No, they didn't. It was in the, for goodness sakes, it was in the regular media. I read it. You read it. It was in the media. Trump was out there in public saying, no, this is to pay for the money we already gave them. We're not just letting them have that money. And then, but they have this, the nerve in these ridiculous Daily Mail propaganda pieces to sit there and say, they were deceiving them. They told them they were going to give them security guarantees. But rather than a mutually beneficial agreement between allies, what are we going to get here? What the U.S. was trying to get was to basically defeat Russia via Ukraine, and they lost. That didn't work. There is no mutually beneficial agreement. What is Ukraine going to offer to the U.S.? Cheap hookers? I mean, no, really, what beneficial, mutually beneficial between allies? The contract was reportedly more exploitative than the conditions imposed on Germany after World War I. Oh, now all of a sudden we're feeling sorry for Germany. Expecting Ukraine to relinquish huge quantities of oil, gas, and mineral resources as a payment for USA provided under the Biden administration. Recalling the president's fury, Ukrainian lawmakers claimed, not like they would lie, Zelensky's bellows reverberated throughout the halls of Kyiv's presidential palace as he laid into Besant for expecting him to sell his country to Washington. He was very angry, a person told the Financial Times, explaining how the gilded doors of Zelensky's presidential office did nothing to stop those outside from hearing every word of the verbal breakdown. Besant was visibly shaken, his voice trembling as he delivered a stumbling statement to reporters moments after, enduring the wrath of the Ukrainian president. He's probably lucky he didn't pull his K-bar out and stab him in the neck. And we all know that when this is over and they negotiate a peace deal, a.k.a. surrender, that these same people would just act like, oh, we never wrote any of that. What are you talking about? You know, there may be a couple of puff pieces trying to frame it as an actual win because, after all, Russia did a full-scale invasion of the Ukraine and didn't take the whole country. But other than that, they're just going to act like, oh, we never said any of that. And then they'll just move on to whatever the next thing is. Speaking of moving on to the next thing, that's what we're going to do. We're going to keep moving on to the next thing with our next story. Dem senator lays in. We're laying in. You see, you got Volodymyr is not the only one laying in to people. Laying in. That's this story. At least they're not using clapback. I remember when they were putting that here a while back in all their stories. So-and-so claps back. What the hell does that even mean? Life in clown world has become TikTok. Dem senator lays into Elon Musk as the, quote, ultimate bad boss, with expletive-ridden posts as deadline for federal workers to respond to his email looms. I don't know what they pay these people. I know. Y'all get tired, probably get tired of me, but it's just the lack of Daily Mail, because I could do this from home. The Daily Mail could pay me a handsome salary to, you know, look through their garbage articles, correct their ridiculous grammar mistakes, and come up with like actual headlines that make sense. A Democratic senator laid into Elon Musk as the ultimate bad boss after the cost-cutting czar told federal workers to justify their work or risk losing their jobs over the weekend. Minnesota Senator Tina Smith, I guess she was clapping back, twice branded Musk a D. They don't want to, you know, they could have just put one star here so we could guess. On his own platform, lamenting his curt instruction to hundreds of thousands of federal employees and joking that hating on D bosses could be the great unifier that brings all Americans together. I bet a lot of people have had an experience with a bad boss. There's an email in your inbox on Saturday night saying, prove to me your worthiness by Monday or else, the Democrat senator wrote on the platform. I'm on the side of the workers, not the billionaire ace bosses. And I saw this. I saw some other, I think it was a union boss for federal workers, if you can imagine that. Federal workers have a union. And this guy was on the news, and he was like, the American people are always going to side with the workers over rich billionaires. To which I add, not government workers. The exception, we're not talking about auto workers. We're not talking about factory workers. We're not talking about people that actually create and do something. When the quote-unquote workers are government workers, yeah, ain't no one siding with that. You can sit there and try to frame it as the workers versus an evil billionaire all you want to. And I once again will amend that I'm not an Elon Musk fanboy. I think he's basically just an actor playing a role. But when you're going to try to frame this as the workers and your workers in question are government workers, ain't nobody siding with these people. Hundreds of thousands of federal employees began their week today mired in chaos and confusion after the head of the so-called Department of Government Efficiency threatened to sack employees unless they could justify their jobs. On Saturday, Musk's team gave staff roughly 48 hours to report five specific things they'd accomplished last week. In a post on Twitter, I refuse to call it X, Musk said any employee who failed to respond by the deadline set in the email as 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday would lose their job. Now, okay, so we're supposed to side with the workers here because of this A-boss who's a real D. This, now, we used to have at least, politicians have always been scummy. You know how I feel about the entire democracy sham system, worst system of government ever designed or come up with. But at least in years past, they tried to at least act, you know, with a little bit of some kind of professionalism. You know, politicians in the past, at least you had some that would like front, like, you know, they were among the working men that somehow made it to Congress because, you know, they saw that in a movie and that plays well. But by and large, they kind of tried to present themselves in the past like as some sort of aristocracy, you know, as a nobility playing out their role. You know, they have their role in the government like a nobility or an aristocracy. And they at least tried to conduct themselves that way. And now they're on Twitter calling people D's and A's, whatever, you know, using profanity. They're very low IQ. Politics is now, like I say, it is down to the lowest tier TikTok video. Now, they want us to side with the government workers here, you know, because the workers, we're all in solidarity with the workers. And no one gives a shit about government workers. Nobody. I'm sorry. You're not. You're not going to get solidarity from the people slaving away at a shitty job at Walmart to have solidarity with some overpaid government worker. And here's the thing that's got them all in a bunch. They got their panties, all their pantsu, their pantsu is all in a bunch. They send out this email on Friday evening saying, name five things you accomplished this week. Okay, put yourself, they're wanting you to put yourself into the shoes of the poor, oppressed, being bullied government worker. Let's say you yourself, because they say you yourself, we don't want to be bullied. Imagine your horrible boss from hell having the nerve. You get an email and they give you not one, two entire days. And the days are on the weekend, so you can take your time coming up with five actual things you accomplished in the past week. And they can't do it. Let that sit. This is what they're telling you, okay? This is what all of this ridiculous outrage and all of this, the workers, the poor pissed workers. They had 2 days. Now, you yourself, if you got an email from your boss And you wouldn't, because your boss already knows what you're doing. Because in a real job, not a government job, your boss is well aware if you're making him money or not. But if your boss sent you an email on Friday and you had two whole days to think up five things that you accomplished this past week, you would probably have a response already sent back to him in what? 10 minutes? Assuming you wanted to kind of, you know, dress things up a little bit, maybe you'll get a little meager raise or something. Little pat on the back. These people were given two whole days to name five things, not 50 things. Five things they accomplished. They can't do it. I mean, I just, the media was hyping this story, but these poor government workers, the workers are being oppressed by a billionaire. Feel solidarity with the poor workers. They had 2 days to come up with five. I'm not even employed. and I would have no problem telling you five things I accomplished last week. This is not a, it's not an insurmountable hurdle unless you haven't been doing a damn thing. You've just been D-ing off, use their term. You've just been D-ing off all week. That's why they're all on hubbub, because they can't figure out five things they've done because they haven't done anything. I know Elon fanboy at all. I think he's playing a role. Anyway, but setting that aside, it reminds me of when he took over Twitter and fired like 80% of the workers, and all of those worthless parasites were out there going, the whole platform is going to collapse in 2 weeks. Because we're not there. How can you fire 70, 80% of the workforce and expect this platform to keep going? And then nothing, nobody knows any difference. Which tells you the 70 to 80% of their workforce wasn't doing anything. I can guarantee you it's more than that percentage in the government. The workers. The poor oppressed workers. Imagine your boss walks up and says, hey, it's Friday evening. They're not even going to give you 2 days. Your boss walks up and he says, hey, what five things did you accomplish this week? You're probably not going to have a problem because you actually are a worker. You're actually doing things. Well, I fixed unit 7A. Then when I was waiting for parts for that, I swept up over here in the area. And then when the parts came in, I finished unit A. Then I moved to unit C and had to start doing that. Then I had to stop and start training the new one. But by the time you were probably at item number 28, the boss would be like, hey, I got to move on. You're doing a good job. Thank you. Thank you very much. These people were given 2 days, 2 days over the weekend to name five things that they actually did, and they can't do it. They can't do it. And we're supposed to feel sorry for the poor oppressed government workers. I wish they'd fire all of them. It's tax time. Y'all know. Have you done your taxes yet? Yeah. Look at how much you paid. Or look at that tax bill you've got. You got to write a check to the IRS. This is where your money goes. That and the USA thing that you've seen. This is where your money goes. Billions to Israel, billions to Ukraine, and billions to these people that can't name five things that they actually did over the past week. And they think they're going to get the workers of America, the working people of America that aren't making government salaries, to rally to this. They should call for a national strike. Every worker in America should show solidarity. They won't do that because they know that won't happen. They ain't going to get no solidarity from everyone else for the poor, oppressed government workers. If they fired 95% of every government worker in Washington, D.C., or across the country, for that matter, how many of you think you would actually notice? You might notice because things might actually get better. Solidarity. Solidarity with the workers. Well, we're going to show solidarity and go ahead and wrap on up because it is Monday. See, y'all are starting off the work week at your non-government job where you do have to actually do something like show up. Remember, a lot of this hubbub is because these people, something only like 6% of them were even showing up at the office. They've been sitting at home drawing a check. And now it's like, well, tell us what you've been doing sitting at home. And they can't. You're not getting to sit at home and draw a government check, and you're having to get to work for this, face this work week. I hope we were able to make your work week a little lighter with this show. I'll be back tomorrow with my Parish of the Patriots program. Be sure, be here for that, I hope. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, of course, will be here Wednesday for his Orthodox Nationalist, and he will be back, Dr. Johnson will be back on Thursday with his Daily Nationalist. So, as always, I hope you have a great week. Keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.